right wing. Lawrence Guyot, a SNCC organizer, used to tell a story. I always thought I needed a dictionary to hear him talk because he liked using big words. But he had a story about a young man who prayed to God and said, God, I'm going to organize America for good. And God said, I am behind you, young man. And then he said, God, I'm going to go to the South and organize the South for good. And he said, son, I'm right behind you. And he said, God, I'm going to go to Mississippi and organize. And God said, I'll go as far as Memphis. When I talk, especially to young groups, about the civil rights movement in Mississippi, I always start by telling them in San Francisco, where I am from, liberal San Francisco, at the time we were in Mississippi, in San Francisco, we were sitting in at the hotels because the hotels would not hire people of color in liberal San Francisco. We were picketing Auto Row, Van Ness, Cadillac, and Ford, and Chevrolet because they would not hire, in 1964, people of color to work on the floor. While I was in Mississippi, 64, November, to my embarrassment, the people of the great state of California voted in by a 63% majority, passed Proposition 14, which specifically stated it was legal to discriminate against people in selling your home. You could say, no, I won't sell to you because you're black and I don't want to break up my block. Fortunately, within 6 months, that law was overturned by the state of California. The point being, Mississippi was not the only place of the sin of segregation and hatred. It was right here at home and from all of the communities that we lived in. Bob Moses used to remind us of that and say, but we choose Mississippi because it's so easy. It is so blatant that there is no division of black and white. It is absolute segregation. So we could work there a lot easier and get the attention necessary to spread the word and the consciousness to the world. And that world included South Africa and other places that benefited from the movement of that time. I am proud to say that I got to eat at the table of Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer. I knew her. I worked in Sunflower County while I was there. Early on in June of 64, when we arrived, I was sitting on the front porch of Mrs. Hamer, and I have to use a prop. It was a hot Mississippi day, and that's how you talked and communicated. And it was twilight, and it was sultry, and she and I were sitting there, and a lady walked by, and she said, Mrs. Wilson, come join us. And she said, Mrs. Wilson, have you registered to vote yet? And Mrs. Wilson said, no, I'm afraid. If I register to vote, I'll lose my job. If I register to vote, they might bomb my home. I'm afraid. And Mrs. Hamer said, but if you do, someday we'll have a black mayor. Someday we'll have black aldermen. Someday we'll have a black policeman. Well, Mrs. Wilson was afraid, and the evening went on. But it's hard to imagine. We all can walk right over here a block away and register to vote without consequences. In those days, to register to vote meant loss of job and possible death or destruction of your home. It seems insane, but that was a reality in America at that time. From Ruleville, I went on to Shaw for a while. My position was handyman. I was a plumber, and I had tools, and I could help build up a freedom school. So in Ruleville, we built the freedom school. We took the existing house and made it a freedom school with a library. In Shaw, I did the same, and then I was asked to go to Indianola, where I spent the rest of my year there. made a Freedom School and did other work while I was there. I met Mrs. Irene Magruder, who remains in my heart to this day. She was my landlady. She was best described as just a very nice, common, quiet, industrious individual. In her lifetime, she had started and built the White Rose Cafe, which was the hot spot in town. She had sold that, and by this time she was living on her Social Security, her savings, and she daycared some nieces and nephews. When the apostles went out, they were directed to go out and live in homes and teach. When our union organizers in the 30s in this country went out, they lived in homes and spread the word and organized. We in SNCC went into communities, tried to get an anchor hold, tried to get places to stay, and took the movement from there. Mrs. Irene Magruder was the first person brave enough in Indianola, Mississippi, the county seat of Sunflower County, to let us in. She'd had a boarding house. We paid $10 a week. And in return, we had shelter. We could cook our own breakfast out of her refrigerator. And for dinner, and you must remember, in the South, dinner is the noontime meal and supper is the evening meal. For dinner, she would prepare a meal, fried chicken, fried pork chops maybe, collard greens, okra. That's food you have to get accustomed to. And always what she called pan bread, which I would call cornbread. And we fed ourselves when we came around on in, and sometimes that was our supper. And then we'd go party at the White Rose. She gave me chores. I was to take out the garbage. And there, you don't take the garbage out front. You take the garbage out back. The things that can burn go in the trash can. The things that are still edible are fed to the chickens. And anything else goes in a pile, which, you know, we would call compost now. She had a truck garden where she grew corn and okra and collard greens and tomatoes, and sometimes I'd go out and she would ask me to help her chop the weeds out of her garden. Another chore she gave me was to feed the chickens. And with joy, every day I went out and fed the chickens, the scraps from the table, some chicken feed that she had, and in the morning I would go out, and when I entered the chicken yard, the chickens would gather around because they knew what I was going to do. She had scrap, useless plywood on the ground, and I would go and pick it up real fast, and the chickens would dash in because there were the vermin in this subtropical climate that had hidden under there for the night. So roaches and crawlies and climbies and things were free protein for the chickens. Come Wednesday night, the house stopped, because that was gun smoke. And Mrs. Magruder loved Marshall Dillon. Nothing else went on. Shut up, sit down. And she sat there in her chair with her can and her snuff, and she watched the love of her life, Matt Dillon, go about and do whatever he was going to do that night. She also talked about growing up in the South and being black in the South. And she talked about how Sundays, when she was younger and would deck out for Sunday school, for church. And you know how the ladies can get dressed for Sunday. But she said she'd have to go out and walk along the wooden sidewalks. And if white people came along, she would have to step off of the sidewalk in her Sunday shoes into the mud to allow the white people to walk by. A tragedy. She also talked about Emmett Till, who at that time, only 9 years before, had been murdered in the next county up, tragically beaten to death, simply because he didn't know social mores of the South. He was from Detroit. and dared, pardon?
Chicago,
thank you, and had dared whistle at a white woman. On May 2, we had had a lot of volunteers, May 2, 65, a lot of volunteers come down from the north, and we were working on voter registration in Drew, Mississippi, which is at the top of Sunflower County. And I was driving up to Drew alone because I was going to pick up a load. It was about twilight and take people back. And as I was approaching, along comes a pickup truck, of course, with the gun hanging in the back. And the meanest face I've ever seen in my life, giving me the hardest finger he possibly could and yelling words I could not hear through the windshield at me. The embodiment of hate. So I picked everyone up and we headed back down. And I said, you know, I feel real scared. And I said, oh, no, listen, we got a party. We got the new volunteers down, and we want to go to the Rose tonight. I said, well, okay, you all go to the Rose. I'm going to stay home and sit by the phone. And I did. And they went, and they did what young people do. They partied, and they drank White Lightning and had a nice time. And instead of going to sleep in my bed, I fell asleep on the couch. And long about midnight, a couple of them came in, and that woke me up. And as soon as they got in the door, we heard a boom. And I ran into my bedroom, and it was a flame. My bed was on fire from gasoline. We managed to get everyone out into the backyard because we couldn't go forward. And then I remembered, and I ran back into the fire to get the cash box and my father's Bible that he had carried through World War II. And somebody yelled, they got the Freedom House. And a block away, you could see the flames in a window. And we pushed the fence down, and we got out to the front of the house, and somebody came running up and said, they got Giles Store. And in that time, I got arrested and miraculously released. I grabbed a bicycle. I was infuriated because the firemen were taking such a slow time to hook it up. And I rode down to Mr. Giles' store, and there he was alone. No fire engines, and he was just finishing. And I said to him, where are the fire engines? He said, I sent them off. I would not let them come into my store to fight the fire, knowing that the same ilk that had thrown the bomb were probably the same ilk that were there to put out the fire. So he saved his own place, and I could see over there another fire. And I rode over to Mr. Wilder's house. He was a one-armed World War II vet. And his house was aflame, and he was reaching down with his garden hose. And he looked up at me and said, hi, Bright, how you doing? As he started to spray an impossible task of putting out this fire with his hose. We survived the night. Mrs. Magruder had insurance. She lived for 2 years in her bedroom and bathroom, which was the only thing that had survived the fire, and rebuilt and lived on into her 80s. 35 years later, okay, I'll conclude. 35 years later, I came back, and we had a civil rights reunion. And we stood at Mrs. Hamer's grave site and sang, We Shall Overcome. And I walked over, and there was the mayor. And I said, ma'am, I'd like to tell you a story. And I told her the story of my first few nights in Mississippi about if we registered to vote. And the mayor began to cry because she was black. And the alderman standing next to her was black. And the chief of police next to him was black. And so what did my Mrs. Magruder give in losing her home? Today, in the state of Mississippi, there are more elected black officials than any place else in the union.